Good morning, everybody, and welcome to episode 36 of the Bitcoin Veteran Spaces. I am your host, Coleman, and today is Choptober 8th. We're still sitting right there between that 62-63K range. I think we're going to be there forever. That's the new 58K gang. So we're going to have a great episode today. We have a featured guest. We have Matthew joining us. I see him up here on the stage. Good morning, sir. How are you doing? I didn't hear if you're trying to speak, Matthew. But before we begin, I want to make sure everybody understands the reason, the purpose that we do this every day, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. And that's to make sure that we spread the message of Bitcoin and what it can do. If you're not familiar or you're not aware, we have Operation Gabriel going on right now in North Carolina. We couldn't sit on the sidelines, and so we wanted to make sure that we were doing our part. And so we've sent our guys out there to help out with the community. And there's no better way to spread the message of Bitcoin than by going out and shaking hands, making faces, and helping those in need. And that's the whole purpose of this, is to make sure that everyone understands the power of a decentralized network, and that is Bitcoin. So quick update with Operation Gabriel. I want to thank everybody who has donated to our link. We had that link up in the nest. So if you could, if you haven't done it yet, if you could donate any sats, any fiat money, if you could just click the link and do so. If you've already done it, I'm going to ask you again, just go ahead and retweet that link. Let's get that message still going. There's still a lot of help that has to be done for everybody in the area. And so again, a huge shout out to everybody. We've raised over $95,000 during this. And we just started this last Thursday, I believe. So it's just an incredible effort. So again, we couldn't do this without everyone here. So again, I want to thank everybody doing this. And I want to give a huge shout out to the anonymous donor who donated a whole Bitcoin over the weekend. So again, I can't say thank you enough. These funds are being utilized to make sure that we're going out there and helping everybody in need. So right now, the things that they need for items are cold weather clothing. It's starting to get colder up in the mountains, so we're getting warm clothes. We're looking for generators, heaters, propane, fuel, and trying to get that to them. Also, first aid equipment. I think there's a lot of people that need insulin and EpiPens, so we're trying to get that situated. And so without your help, you know, we wouldn't be able to start doing this stuff. We're using our Meshtastic devices to help communicate with the locals in the area. So again, they have no cell phones, no satellite or anything. And so the Meshtastic devices are allowing us to make communication with these small communities. And we're linking up with the Tennessee National Guard. And so we have them flying our Meshtastic devices on their Blackhawks. So essentially what we have going is our own little private Starlink system, low orbit. So we're able to communicate with everything, because that's how the Meshtastic devices work, is by line of sight. So we're linking up with them. And if you check on the nest, we actually have one of their Blackhawks landing at our LZ Zombie. And so you should check that out. It's so cool. It's so amazing that we're getting the help and these resources from the National Guard and just other veterans out there. So we're really making a good name for ourselves. And again, we couldn't be doing this without you all. And so if anybody knows of anyone that is hurting, that is struggling, that needs immediate help, reach out to us. We've made a lot of links and connections with the local authorities. And so we have ways to go help people. We just have to know who needs the immediate help. So send us a message to the Bitcoin Veterans handle, or message anybody up here on stage, and we can go ahead and get access to or get them the help that they need. Because right now, time is of the essence. It's been a long time since these people have been helped if they're struggling. So we need to make sure we get out there. Alex, did you have anything you wanted to add to this, sir?
Hey, good morning. Just want to thank everybody who's helped so far, and point out that somebody said the other day, like, how this pertains to Bitcoin. Somebody said that, like, you've all heard that thing about, well, if there's no internet and there's no power and all that other kind of stuff, then how do you use Bitcoin? And we have yet to do this, but it's one of the things I really want to see happen at some point is that I want to start pushing, if possible, Bitcoin transactions over ham radio and over Meshtastic networks. And it just goes to show you that with these guys going out there setting up gensets and Starlinks, stuff like that, that like, even if there's a power outage, if you have a genset, you have a Starlink, you should be able to fire up if you absolutely have to send Bitcoin to somebody. And more people are starting to figure out, you know, the funny thing about electricity is you don't realize how important it is for a lot of people until you don't have it for a really extended period of time. And electricity really is the difference between civilization and not civilization in our modern world. So people are figuring that stuff out. And I just want to point out one last thing, and I'll shut up, is that since we set up this sort of comms network where we're linking up civilians and we've got a bunch of veterans on the ground up there with active duty military, we're in comms with Air Force and Army assets, as well as National Guard. It's really cool because what's happened is that these networks are playing out in a way where, as of last night, the I won't say what unit, but there's National Guard units that are asking us for tasking for their Blackhawks. You know, if there's people who needs help that they don't know about. All of it's important. Like, all the civilian traffic is just as important because we have people who are like literally like dropping requests for help in a Facebook post where they're like, hey, I have family members up in this valley and nobody's heard from them. Or maybe they did get a cell message or a text message and some of these people haven't had water or electricity for going on 11 days now. And I mean, this is the kind of stuff that this is where people die. You know what I mean? So, we're able to take these kind of messages and hopefully here moving forward, we're going to be able to get air assets as much as possible directly to those people. And as Coleman mentioned, we've got guys on the ground working with, there's a bunch of different teams, not just ours. But there's a bunch of teams that are going up in those mountains and they're marking LZs and they're finding ways to get helicopters and stuff into these areas where the roads are just completely washed out and destroyed and it's impossible to reach them. So anyway, I just think it's really amazing to see all of this coming together and just humbled and honored to watch it and just know some of these guys that are working on this stuff and putting it all together. It's just amazing to see.
No, thank you for that, Alex. And it is amazing. And again, we couldn't do this without y'all. So I really want to say thank you for everybody who's helped out, everyone who sent donations, everyone who's tweeted the link. It goes a long way. And we're really making a name for ourselves. We're showing the world what Bitcoin can do for communities. We don't need authority from everybody. It's decentralized. And we're going to get out there and we're going to continue to spread this message. And before the show's over, we'll go give another update as well as to what's going on. But without further ado, I'd like to welcome Matthew Lisick to the panel. Good morning, sir.
Hi, good morning. Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. Great, great work you are all doing.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I hope I didn't mess up your last name too bad. I've tried to listen to a couple different people saying it. And so I tried to just...
No, man, it's all right. I've been used to it since kindergarten, so it's good. It's actually Lee Shack, but it doesn't matter. It's my honor to be on your show.
Well, thank you, and I'll make sure I get it right next time. Yeah. I want to dive right into this. This book, Fiat Foods. It really makes you almost frustrated to a point when you're seeing all the evilness, and there's no other word for it, and deceit that's going on within the food industry. And so my first question for you, Matthew, would be, where do you drink your water? What water do you use? Because at the end of the last little bit that you write, you talk about the University of Idaho study with the flathead minnows and how they were placed in the water combined with antidepressants that are found in American tap water. And do you mind hitting on that and answering where do you get your water from to avoid this?
Nice, man. Diving right into the heavy section. I love it. Personally, we have a well, so we're fortunate. We have well water, which I don't think is completely absent of some of these chemicals, just because of the way we've been treating our this overall sanitation. But yeah, we do well water here in our small enclave in Patagonia, Arizona.
What do you recommend for people that don't have their own well?
That's hard. I don't know. I don't let my kids drink when we go out to eat, which is rare. I don't let them drink the tap water. So they might get like the Pellegrino, which I know isn't the best option. It's really difficult. I mean, we live in the desert. We need to stay hydrated, but the water supply is tainted and there's toxins. I just spent last weekend with Del Bigtree. I don't know if your audience know who he is. He's an interesting guy who has been fighting for a lot of these issues. And he does the, I think it's called the Higher Side Chats podcast. But he and his group has just recently succeeded in pushing for the government to deregulate fluoride in the water. So this was a really positive step. Up until just recently, it was mandated that all cities had to have fluoride in their water. And you know, when obviously the studies show how fluoride reduces IQ, and the government just sort of thought they didn't dispute those studies. They just said, well, it's a good trade-off, you know, because the teeth are getting better and maybe some IQ drops. It's a net win. They were successful in giving some autonomy back to these local municipalities, and now they are free to go off fluoride. So I think one of the big things that the audience could do is just check out what the water supply in your local municipality is, and perhaps go to the board meetings and push and educate people on the drinking water, and try to get, now that we're sounds silly to use this kind of language, now that we're allowed to drink water that isn't full of fluoride, it'd be great for that movement to gain some more momentum.
Thank you. Yeah, good points with that. During your research, like there was a lot of aha moments in your book. And I'd like to kind of throw it back to you, is what was one of the moments where you're like, wow, I really can't believe I discovered this? Like, what was the most shocking thing to you?
Yeah, I went into this book initially thinking that corporations are really greedy and they're responsible. They're at the core of how our food system has been corrupted. And that's the thing. So I think we're at an interesting place right now. I think people recognize that, yes, our food system has completely been corrupted, and they're trying to find the motive. And you find a lot of these people on TV right now discussing this. And Kennedy's doing great work on it. But one of the things that really blew my mind was that It really, when you get to the core of this, it isn't corporations at the root cause of what manipulated our money supply. Corporate interests existed way before these, you know, we became unhealthy and our food supply became corrupted. And I outlined this extensively in my book. What really shifted was the money. And when Nixon in particular gave the speech on August 15th, 1971, where he decoupled from gold. Now, before then, the American people couldn't redeem their promissory notes for gold, but foreign banks could. So this put a powerful restraint on spending. And when you go through a lot of the memos in the Nixon administration after the decoupling, they were very aware that inflation would ensue, which is a huge political liability. And they went on what, in retrospect now, amounts to about a 60-year gaslighting campaign to alter the food supply to obscure the monetary theft of inflation.
Can you explain why governments fear that, the price of food going up so much?
Yeah, this always shocks a lot of people. But historically, governments, they can survive all kinds of corruption. People keep voting them in. War, people keep voting them in. But when food prices get too high, what you find is a complete correlation to political instability. And I'll point your audience to just recently, the 2022 Sri Lanka riots, where hundreds of thousands of people stormed the capital and the leaders had to leave. or even I'll cite American University, which is based in Washington, D.C. They had a study that showed 22,500 food and energy related riots in the year 2022 in Europe alone. So the link between food prices being low and or food prices being high rather and political instability is extremely high. And when you go back through, starting with the actually Lyndon Johnson, you see that they're very aware of this. For instance, I have a part of my book where I talk about there's a man named Samuelson who worked in the Lyndon Johnson administration. And now there was still a partial gold standard under Johnson, but we were already committing a big fraud at that point, because through the Vietnam War and a lot of the LBJ spending programs, we had already issued a significant amount more of promissory notes than gold we had in our treasury. So all it would have taken was for a few different foreign governments to come to try to redeem their notes at the same time to expose us as a fraud. Part of the reason Nixon had to decouple. But under Johnson, according to Samuelson, eggs started going up in price as a result of all these paper notes being spread out through the world economy. And this was a political liability for Johnson, who at the time was still contemplating running for re-election. So he ordered a Surgeon General into his office, and he's like, look, man, we need to lower the price of eggs. And the Surgeon General is just, I don't know what to do. I can't do this. Well, LBJ instructed his Surgeon General to issue a blatantly phony press release to say that eggs were unhealthy. And as a result, this got carried uncritically through the media. As a result, the supply of eggs stayed the same, but the demand went down, which resulted in prices stabilizing, which was considered a political victory. And, you know, you see this again and again and again, where behind the scenes, you have government authorities very worried about the rising price of food. And what ends up happening is these narratives begin to form. You know, in the 40s, it was don't eat meat because we need to save it for the troops. And meat's really, you know, gives you strength and we need it for the war effort. And then in the 70s, you see it shift when a book called The Population Bomb came out by a real moron named Paul Ehrlich. Every prediction this guy's made has gone completely wrong. But he posited this theory that meat was too resource intensive. And as a result of the rising population, we needed to stop eating meat to preserve resources, or else we're all going to end up starving to death. And he predicted that this would happen by 1986, by 1984, by 1979. And obviously, he's been completely wrong. And now the shift has happened again, where you know you have somebody like Mayor Eric Adams in New York City saying that they're not going to allow their public school children to eat meat because they think that it alters the temperature of the earth. So you have this just really long gaslighting campaign, and there's various covers that they use. But when you really get down to the data and you look at some of the, even the World Health Organization is very aware of this. They're constantly worried about the perception that food prices are high. And in reality, I mean, look, I have four daughters, so I can feed my entire family on four boxes of cereal. And I can look around and say, like, my God, food is actually cheap. Like I did that for under $12. But what you find is that the nutrients essential for humans to thrive that we've relied on for thousands of years has become cost prohibitive. So you don't really notice inflation if you're eating grains, because you can print out Doritos or Fruit Loops on scale and just keep a public full of food. But meat is increasingly becoming cost prohibitive and a food only of the upper classes. And, you know, now you have sort of this PSYOP, which has young people virtue signaling over eating grains like the 1400s. So there's a lot of elements at play, but at its very core, this happened. All these incentives for corporations were in place pre-1970. When we were still eating on average 155 pounds of red meat a year. Today, that's been cut in half. And it's no coincidence that, you know, we're also printing out all these dollars. I mean, if people really understood the true degradation of our currency through fiat, I think there'd be riots in America too. But because we have the CEO of Kellogg's jumping on, I don't know if you guys saw him a few months ago on CNBC, he was telling people that under all this inflation, a really good opportunity to not just have cereal for breakfast, but have it for lunch and dinner too. You don't notice inflation if you're only eating cereal, but you notice it if you're eating animal-based products and meat.
Yeah, and it's just so crazy that they're able to get away with all this gaslighting and this fake information. In your book, you talk about the Tufts University Food Compass report from 23, where they say that Kellogg's cereal is healthier than meats, eggs, and cheese. And it's just crazy that they're able to get away with that, those lies. But it just tells you how much money is able to swing the narrative and people that are outspoken with it. And in the book, you mentioned that people that are outspoken about the effects of this food, how they get ostracized.
Yeah, historically, like a lot of your audience, I'm sure, has heard of Ansel Keys. He's, if you went to school in the 90s like I did, you were taught about what a genius Ansel Keys was. The reality is he was the subject of bribes. Ansel Keys was the most renowned nutritionist of the 60s and the 70s and the 50s. The New York Times uncovered that he accepted bribes from the sugar industry. And Keys promoted what became known as the diet heart hypothesis. Now, go back to the early 50s. Eisenhower has a heart attack. The whole country's freaking out about heart attacks. Like, where do these come from? What happened? And Ansel Keys had a hypothesis that saturated fat found in meat caused heart ailments. Now, this was a hypothesis, and he had a lot of observational studies which couldn't establish causal relationships to validate this. A lot of scientists looked at his data, though, and were like, this is ridiculous. There's no, you know, these are observational studies, which is essentially handing out flyers. You could use observational studies to kind of come up with anything. For instance, I could poll your audience and be like, how many of you guys have had the flu? And how many of you have had whole milk in your life? And then from that, I could have an article that says, whole milk linked to flu. And, you know, that's wouldn't be a lie. The study would be right, but it's just the variables are goofy. Ansel Keys did at some point in 1968 really try to validate, though, this diet heart hypothesis. And for the first time, he had a clinical study which could establish a causal relationship because he could control variables. So it was called the Minnesota Coronary Survey. And it lasted 4 years, used a ton of money and government grant money. And 1972 rolls around, the study's over. There's no reveal of what happened in the study. The study's just buried. Nobody talks about it. Nobody knows anything about it. Years later, the New York Times uncovers that some reporter there is like, what happened to that study? I remember it when I was a kid, and was able to track down one of the researchers' kids because the researcher had died, and the kid had all the boxes of the study in their basement. The Times and some health experts went through, and what they found was not only did this study, the most extensive clinical research done to establish whether the diet heart hypothesis was true, it found that not only did the study not validate Ansel Keys and his diet heart hypothesis, but it actually had a higher association for people who had low cholesterol to better health or to higher health risks. So people who had lower cholesterol actually did worse than people that had higher cholesterol. And Gary Taubes, who's a great science journalist, tracked down one of the still living researchers and was like, why didn't you release this to the public? And the response was very telling. The researcher said, there's nothing wrong with this study, but quote, we were just so disappointed in the results. So that's the psyop we're dealing with. There's these established wins, and they all become weaponized as fiat gain traction. And that's why it's kind of, you see, we're at a weird influx right now where it's increasing. The need to have and switch and alter our food supply from whole foods and meat, which meat is really like, it's hard to raise a cow. Talk to a rancher. I just spent the weekend with a guy named Texas Slim, who's a really great rancher in Texas and an advocate for the ranching community. And he explains it's really time intensive. You can't just print cows out like you can with corn. But post fiat, Richard Nixon hired somebody, got somebody named Orville, man, I can't think of his name right now. He was put as the head of the Department of Agriculture. And he had a slogan, go big or go home. And they began tons of grant money, fiat grants, to consolidate what had been local, independent, scattered farming community throughout the country into these conglomerates. They did it in purpose to make the food supply cheaper. And they weren't, you know, when I go through the research, nobody was trying to hurt us. They weren't, that wasn't their goal, but they were trying to reduce the effects of inflation and that people would notice it. Because this in the early 70s was just such a lightning rod political issue. Sorry, I think I rambled a lot there. I hope I answered your question.
No, you definitely did. But during those grants, though, didn't they benefit the large farmers and they tried to weed out the small ones, correct?
Oh, exactly. I mean, so also it wasn't just the grants. And it was also loans. They issued loans at much better rates to larger farmers and small, because that was their whole goal, was to to get rid of these independent small farmers, which I would argue the evidence shows it's still ongoing. The few remaining farmers left, you look at the attacks on the raw milk industry. Those aren't attacks on raw milk. Those are attacks on independent farmers. And a lot of it is pushed with the help of the big agricultural companies who have in large part captured these government agencies. And, you know, it's like, people don't understand. They're like, oh, this is crazy. Why would you attach the fiat money printer to this? There's a lot of reasons. And I didn't go into this with a dog in a race. Like, I wasn't a Bitcoin guy. I literally thought this would be a book about how Big Food has captured these different agencies. But, you know, you go back to when we were on a gold standard. At that point, you couldn't enact policy very easily without the consent of the public. Fiat was invented in 1914 by John Maynard Keynes because Great Britain wanted to prolong World War I, and the public didn't want that. The public in England did not want war. They did not want another European conflict. And because they couldn't do it through taxation, they implemented fiat. And in fiat, you know, you're able to weaponize the work and the production and the labor of the public without their consent, just through the printing of currency. Because, I mean, in America today, ownership of your money is really just a slogan. You don't actually own your dollar because there's an unelected cabal of bankers who could just print out as many fiat dollars as they want. As you see, that it's a hidden taxation without your consent. So when these food subsidies began being issued to corn, soy, and sugar, they didn't need the consent of the public. They could just print out the money. And then when people are curious as to why red meat's gone up, you know, the textbook is you just blame the corporations. And it's a cycle. And it's as the dollar becomes further degraded, you see the intensity of the gaslighting campaign only heighten.
Yeah, so it does go back to the money and how corrupt it is and how it's intertwined into everything. I did want to hit on how grain just kind of became a staple and how it was pushed. And in my notes, I want you to talk about John Harvey Kelly, and I have it bolded. He's a monster. Can you explain to everybody who hasn't read the book how evil this man was?
Oh, man. Coleman, like your audience is going to totally think I'm jumping the shark here. They're all going to start clicking off. So I'll tell the story, but I'm warning everybody. This is like an episode of The Twilight Zone. I got to go back to the early 1900s. And a young girl named Ellen White is walking home from school. And she gets hit in the face with a rock. It sends her into a coma. And she wakes up out of this coma and reveals that she's been getting messages from God. And God says, Ellen, you need to start a church. And this church needs to be based on purifying people's body and soul. And the reason they're not pure is because they're eating too much meat. And the meat is causing carnal desires. And these carnal desires are leading to not just impure bodies and souls, but every health malady under the sun. Ellen founds the Seventh-day Adventist Church. And she has a young protege named John Harvey Kellogg. And she tasks John Harvey Kellogg, because at the time, Americans are eating meat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. They're eating the food their ancestors ate, and they're, you know, doing pretty well on this diet. John Harvey Kellogg is tasked with coming up with something to replace meat for breakfast as essentially an anti-masturbatorial drug for the masses. And he invents Kellogg's cornflakes. He gets, you know, this sounds really wacky. They were inspired in part by Thomas Graham, inventor of the Graham cracker, who had the exact same belief system that masturbation caused by carnal desires, caused by red meat, led to every single health malady. But it's hard, it's impossible to overstate the influence of John Harvey Kellogg, because he was the celebrity doctor of the day. And he went around the country giving speeches and writing books. And one of the things that he advocated, you talked about him being a monster, you couldn't be more right on. He was a complete, I think he was like a psychopath. One of the things he discussed and advised was that parents put carbolic acid on the clitorises of daughters so that they wouldn't attempt self-gratification, or put young men in cages, or perform surgery without anesthesia so that they would have muscle memory to these things. So John Harvey Kellogg pushes this cereal as an anti-masturbatorial drug, Kellogg's cornflakes. Up until then, people were eating meat. John Harvey Kellogg gets into a fight with his brother, who helped him come up with this. And his brother wanted to put sugar into food. John Harvey Kellogg was against the sugar. And John Harvey Kellogg, he was a eugenicist. He went to Michigan and helped pass legislation to remove the female body parts of over 3,000 women in Michigan against their will, who he deemed to have would have an ill effect on society. So John Harvey Kellogg leaves. He's succeeded by somebody named Leanna Cooper, who founds the American Dietetic Association, which becomes highly influential in America in government health. So the church grows in influence. Still, by 1970, even though the church has made inroads, even though corporate greed in terms of being able to make, just corporations make far more money on processed grains than they do selling meat. Despite these influences, Americans are still eating 155 pounds on average a year of red meat. And that's where you see everything shift. In 1971, when Nixon decouples and we begin printing out all this money to keep Vietnam going, to keep these government spending programs started by LBJ and Nixon going, you see that suddenly this huge campaign to alter the American diet. Up until then, people really didn't think about what to eat. I mean, it's kind of like, you don't need to buy my book to find out what to eat. Just look at what your great-great-grandmother ate and how she cooked. She was probably pretty right on, and that's how people ate for thousands of years. But you see this giant shift happen where now you fast forward a few years later, and you have like wealthy younger women virtue signaling as they're eating like 14th century peasants. It's really astounding and kind of in certain ways very impressive in how they were able to get the American public to conform to a diet that was against their nature.
And they put a lot of blame on the housewife, correct, for not trying to limit the meat.
Oh yeah, Nixon at one point in a press conference talked about housewives. They wouldn't. There used to be I even remember it as a kid, like powdered milk. Do you remember that? Powdered milk. They used to have, they used to use like housewives. They won't switch to powdered milk. They're drinking whole milk and they won't stop. You know, they're still buying meat for their husbands. That's why food prices are going up. It's because of the housewife. I mean, they blame everything, but what is that really the heart? What is the core of the problem, which is the degradation of our money? And it's absurd. I mean, it's like, it's not even really that complicated. I mean, we've been printing out dollars untethered to gold for several decades now. And this is the consequence. Like the food, everything's going up in price, but we don't notice it in a lot of things because technology keeps evolving. And so like electronics seem to be getting cheaper, but it's because the technology is increasing. There's innovators constantly working, but it's really difficult to streamline a cow and do that right for that steak that we want. So, you know, you want to see the consequences in real form. It's not an abstraction. Just go to any Walmart in America and look in line and you'll see that people are really, really sick. And where in the past overweight people, you know, I'm Italian and Polish. So a lot of my ancestors, they viewed obesity with affluence, with abundance. But today it's the opposite. It's a sign of poor nutrition because people are constantly craving nutrients. So they're eating all day and they're not satiated because they're not getting the nutrients that we had in the past.
Well, depending on who you ask, it's not a sign of poor eating. It's genetics, right? That's what happened in that 60 Minutes episode a couple years ago.
So Coleman, like I just got to tip my hat to you, man, because I do a lot of these interviews and I appreciate all of them, but I think it's pretty rare that somebody actually reads the whole book. So like, you know, usually they skim it or they have a producer read it and they get their bullet points. So I really appreciate you reading it. Dude.
Oh yeah. No, I really enjoyed the book, Matthew. I pass it to all my friends. It's one of my, I always pass out the Bitcoin Standard, but this is becoming another, just a 1-2 handout because the information in your book is just, everybody has to know what's going on. So sorry, no, please continue.
Man. You know, and writing this book changed my life. It did. It changed my life because I didn't know. I knew something was wrong, but I didn't know. And yeah, so just to give you, your audience, some insight into what we're up against here. January 2023. The Tufts Food Compass comes out. And I think about these idiots a lot because these are experts who spend their entire life, their entire professional career studying nutrition. And as you mentioned, they came up after spending years and years of research, hundreds of thousands of dollars in government grants. They come up with guidance to the American public that we should be eating Fruit Loops, apple flavored Honey Nut Cheerios, all these grain-based diets and all these grain-based foods, not coincidentally, 55 General Mills and Kellogg's foods were on the list of things that should be eaten. They also happen to be huge sponsors of the study, while red meat, eggs, butter were all on to be discouraged. But this same month, January of 2023, 60 Minutes, renowned journalist Leslie Stahl has this segment where she explains to the world that obesity is not the result of lifestyle. She does this through a doctor named Dr. Fatima Stanford with her very pristine white coat, very eloquent woman. And Dr. Fatima Stanford tells Leslie Stahl, new research indicates that if you're overweight, it's not your fault. You had no control. It's, quote, a genetic brain disease. And I'm particularly harsh on this monstrosity of humanity, Dr. Fatima Stanford, because I don't think there's anything more evil, or there's very few things more evil than telling somebody that they don't have the fundamental control over their own life. Like, if you're not in control of your health, if you have to outsource your personal autonomy in terms of physical health to these credentialed experts, then you're really putty for anything. So Dr. Fatima Stanford goes on to explain that it's a genetic brain disease. It's nothing to do with lifestyle. And She happens to be a paid consultant for Novo Nordisk, which is the parent company of Ozempic. The segment was sponsored by Ozempic. The only other consultant they had as an expert was, yes, a paid consultant for Ozempic. That same month, Tufts Food Compass comes out. This segment airs. Then the American Pediatrics Association, for the first time in over a decade, changes their guidelines on how to treat childhood obesity. They say, for instead of recommending lifestyle choice, maybe cut out the sugar, like my doctor told my mom when I was a fat little kid, Ozempic. They said, now we can recommend, doctors are told now to recommend for fat kids these weight loss drugs. And if you're on these weight loss drugs, I mean, it's a lifetime of injections. Now, I looked for public documents to see if there was any coordination between Tufts, the American Pediatric Association, and 60 Minutes. And I actually found nothing. But at the same time, I'd have to be a little naive to think that it was just all coincidence, all within the same 5-week period, these three monumental things happen at the same time. But it kind of goes again, and it makes me think how many other things are happening like this that we just don't know, we don't find out about. And it goes into what we're up against. So I have a lot of compassion for people who are overweight. I mean, I was an overweight child growing up in the 90s under the, if you guys remember, the 1992 dietary food pyramid, which was really, nutrition standards came out in 1980. Before then, people just knew what to eat. And the standard said, eat lots of grains, eat less meat. But 1992 was a really big one because it actually told you exact amounts. And it said that we should eat between 8 and 11 servings of grains a day, which is a recipe for metabolic destruction. So I grew up under that period and I became overweight. You know, and people might look at this and be like, oh, it's government food policies. Who gives a shit what the government says? Well, the government food policies, that 1992 food pyramid, became in law in public schools across America. So you had to abide by it. It's literally against the law to serve whole milk in the public school. So what you do is you have this low-fat milk, which is awful. It tastes terrible. So they have to infuse it with strawberry and chocolate flavoring, amounting to sugar. I mean, and basically the kids are drinking soda. So by the time anybody comes out of public school, you're already metabolically compromised and you're addicted to a lot of these foods. And man, it's rough. We're up against a lot. We're up against a lot.
Yeah. Just kind of piggyback off what you said, she had said that if you're born into parents who have obesity, you have a 50 to 85% likelihood of having the disease. And they're saying obesity is a disease. And they go to stress that even with optimal diet, exercise, sleep management, and stress management, you're still susceptible to this. So I just find that so infuriating that take a pill and this will fix it. Don't worry about what crap you're putting into your body.
Oh, but don't worry, Coleman, because Dr. Fatima Stanford, who, if words have meaning, is just an awful human being. As a punishment for saying something so transparently dumb on national TV, representing the medical scientific community while being paid by these weight loss manufacturers, as punishment, she has been placed on the highly prestigious panel, the 2025 Dietary Guidelines Panel. So she will be one of the people who establishes the next dietary guidelines that will be pushed on all of our public school students, hospitals, and nursing homes.
And we all know how that's going to end. It's just...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's horrible. Matthew, I'd like you to touch a little bit on like how... At the beginning, I think in the book you said it was like in the late 1800s, early 1900s, how Crisco had to convince the populace that cotton was in fact a vegetable, so cotton seed oil was okay.
So yeah, dude, this is, I mean, one of the things that shocked me was how people in the early 1900s just really wanted to eat real food. They didn't recognize the concept of not eating real food. And when Crisco first came out, two different products came out around the same time. Oleomargarine, which is just a chemical shitstorm, and Crisco, which was made by Procter & Gamble and out of cottonseed waste. And they had this cottonseed waste because it used to help lubricate, well, motors in the Industrial Revolution. And it, you know, worked with candles. But suddenly, post-Industrial Revolution, Procter & Gamble had all this cottonseed waste, but they didn't know what to do with it because people didn't need it anymore. So they manipulated it and just, they started to try to tell people it was food. Same with margarine. There was riots over margarine in New York City in the early 1900s because store keeps were not telling people and replacing it with butter because it was cheaper. And, you know, people would eat it and they're like, this isn't food. What is this? And, you know, there were court cases and people were really upset about it. Same with Crisco. Like, people cooked in lard for thousands of years and suet and animal based. But what happens is you see this really sophisticated marketing campaign by Procter & Gamble going after housewives, telling them they were unsophisticated for using lard in their kitchen and that the modern housewife uses Crisco and it's healthy and clean and doesn't stink up your kitchen like old-fashioned lard. And people rebelled against it. People weren't buying it for a while. World War II changed the dynamic a bit because margarine was simply cheaper, significantly cheaper, as was Crisco. Because again, these are things that you can mass produce at scale. And, you know, the people eventually accepted it. And it took a lot of work, but that was the first time that we began introducing poisons and non-food into the human diet. And it's like kind of set off a whole gateway that led us to this moment where we are now. But again, come 1970, I know I'm beating the drum on this a lot, Coleman, but 1970, the Americans are still eating mainly meat. So we've introduced these things, but we're eating mainly meat. It's only after we degraded our currency and we're trying to hide that from the public that we begin funneling the productive labor through the inflationary theft of fiat into these different foods that really tilted the table and got us away from me. For instance, Loma Linda University, which is still run by the Seventh-day Adventist Church and comes up with probably 95% of these food studies that come out. They're observational studies, but has received hundreds of millions of dollars in government grants. Fiat dollars have been flowed into Loma Linda University. And they're not studies. They're documents that are basically public relations. So your audience should really understand that when they're looking at a study that claims to be nutrition science, there's a 95% chance that it's just marketing. And that's what they're reading. It's like a marketing campaign. And it's not new. I mean, they did this with the cigarette companies in the 50s, right? Like, you could go back and look at all the studies conducted by the cigarette companies that showed cigarettes were healthy. It was marketing. Yet we think it doesn't happen today. And it goes back to Dr. Fatima Stanford, because there's a really bigger movement now, and I don't want to get too into weeds on this, but it's like, it's almost a spiritual movement where they're trying to take away people's self-autonomy, and they're trying to convince us to outsource our own judgment, our own common sense on what is transparently right and wrong, and outsource that to these credentialed authorities. And once you can kind of successfully make people feel like they're incapable of making these decisions, then suddenly, oh, you know, the latest pharmaceutical product comes out. It's safe and effective. I've had it 3 times. I've gotten 3 boosters. I'm still getting sick. I don't feel so good, but they're assuring me the 4th will really fix it. You begin sort of becoming a product, an end to a means that is really just cycling us down and shortening our lifespans.
No, it is. And that was the whole point in the early 1900s, was to control people. And that's why we started introducing this food. Grains were introduced because it made people impotent. It decreased their sex drive. And I think in the book too, you mentioned that throughout history, you can see that when people are consuming more red meat, their brain size starts to grow. And with less, it starts to diminish. Did I get that correct?
Oh, totally. The clinical studies were done on, for instance, you have chimpanzees, are very close to humans, but they don't eat a lot of meat. So what they have to do is they have to go around eating leaves all day. They spend almost all day just foraging and eating. And it's really not unlike the fiat man who has to spend all day grazing because they're not getting the nutrients they need to exist and to thrive. So they find themselves just walking around all day, like waiting from meal to meal, like a chimpanzee. And as a result, what happens is, right, your brain, there's been really interesting studies, and I haven't dug too deep into them, but I encourage your audience to look into certain studies that show when you're eating a lot of plants, your belly grows, and it grows at the expense of your brain, and blood flow, instead of going to your brain, goes to your stomach, and that becomes more. And dude, look, man, like I feel like I've experienced this in my own life where my thought process when I'm eating a lot of plant shit is just constantly like around when my next meal is going to be. I talked to Nina Teicholz, who wrote a great book called The Big Fat Surprise. I encourage everybody to read it. She discussed when I asked her, when I told her, like, I have issues eating plants and grains and it's addictive. And she had great advice. She's like, eat red meat in the morning, first thing, and you'll feel satiated then because you got the nutrients. And it doesn't eliminate all the addictive tendencies, but now it became much easier for me to get through a day without, you know, eating peanut butter cups.
No, and I do think that there's definitely something to that. I find that when I eat more red meat, my cravings go away, and I don't have that 2 o'clock crash where I'm just, I need something, I need coffee, I just feel down. So yeah, there's definitely something there. But Matthew, as we're starting to get to the top of the hour, I just want to start kind of wrapping things up. And what advice do you have for anyone who's listening here that wants to start making healthier choices?
Yeah, look, I hope you buy my book, but really you don't have to. Look at what your great-great-grandmother ate. She was right. Go that route. And don't listen to your doctor who's probably overweight. And if he's anything like mine, he can't talk without wheezing. Just give it 10 days. 10 days where you just try this out. Try eating nothing but animal-based products for 10 days and then listen to your body and see how your mind feels. And listen to that. And I think that you'll be shocked by the results. Shocked.
How long should someone try this if they're just getting into it? 30 days, 60 days, 90 days? What do you recommend?
I mean, I think I know how hard it is. These things are addictive and the societal pressure is really difficult. I think just try one day at a time. If you can get to day 10 is when you start feeling good. I have to drink a lot of raw milk to keep my weight up. That's one thing I noticed. I play a lot of basketball with people much younger and more skilled than myself. So I get thrown around a lot if I don't keep my weight up. If you could do it 60, great. 90, great. But once you see it and once you feel it, it's impossible to unsee and unfeel. And don't beat yourself up too much when you fall off the wagon because you've been on an addictive food-based diet for, you know, probably years. It's going to take a while to completely erase those cravings. But once you do, you'll find it's such a life hack. And I just wish other people could feel it. And it's like, you know, a lot of people don't know what it's like to walk around not being inflamed. You know, you can feel so much better. Just give it a chance and don't trust me. Trust your body and listen to how it feels.
Yeah, that's the best advice. Listen to your body. It'll tell you what it needs.
Yeah.
And so that's really important. Just really quick, I want to give a quick thank you to our partners, Black Sheep Ammo. Restock your ammo supplies at blacksheepammo.com. Punch Plate, I see you guys in the audience. Good morning. Make sure you stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Check them out at punchplate.com. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. And Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms training at paladintowertactics.com. I definitely want to give some shout outs to people in the audience. I see Michelle Halbert out there, Texas Toast, LBN, Steve B, Jackie, Eomar, Tom Tabor, Bob Van Kirk. I just want to say thank you guys for tuning in. Matthew, where can we start directing people to make sure we're following you? Best way to reach you?
I'm on X. I'm like really bad at social media and stuff. But you know, you could find Fiat Food through you know, anywhere books are sold on Amazon. And you guys are doing great work, and I just really appreciate you having me on. We're in a beautiful time in a way right now, because you know, I've done books for a lot of major publishing houses in the past, and I was really, you know, you have like this set situation where you have a bunch of publishing houses, and they're setting you up with these media, like ABC, NBC, CBS. I've done Fox News and MSNBC and all these, but it's this decentralized news platform and spaces like Bitcoin Veterans, like your own, and that are giving voices to these really what are considered modern day heretical ideas. So I'm just very appreciative that, you know, you gave me an opportunity to speak to your audience, and thanks, man.
No, thank you for coming on. It really means a lot to us. And again, I really enjoy your book, and I recommend everyone to go out there and purchase it. The information we covered a lot, but we didn't really scratch the surface of everything that Matthew goes into in the book. So definitely recommend going into it and just realizing how corrupt this system is and how evil a lot of these people that play a major role in what we society deems as eating healthy, what their true intentions were. So it is absolutely crazy. I want to give another quick update for everybody who had missed the beginning of the space about Operation Gabriel. So again, huge thank you to everybody who's donated. It means a lot. We've raised over $95,000. So again, thank you so much. If you haven't donated, the link's up at the top. Go ahead and just scan it. It'll take you to Zaprite, and you can pay in fiat or Bitcoin. Also, if you could just share that link, go ahead and retweet that, get the message out there. There's still a lot of work to get done. It's starting to get colder out there, so we're really trying to find some cold weather clothing, some heaters, fuel for the heaters, and communication. That's the biggest thing, is just trying to get in touch with everybody out there. If you know anyone that is stranded, that is stuck, that is in need of dire help out in that area, send us a message, reach out to us. We've made a lot of communication with different communities, organizations. We're actually utilizing the Tennessee National Guard. They've reached out to us, and they're ready to assist us, Bitcoin veterans, with anything that we need. So reach out to us if you know of anybody that needs help, because time is of the essence. It's been going, it's almost a week and a half now, so 10 days. So people are really hurting. I also want to thank the person who donated a whole Bitcoin to this. They did it anonymously. But again, I want to give a huge thank you for that. And Gabe, I see you're up here. Do you want to add anything that I might have missed on Operation Gabriel?
No, thank you. Also, thank you, Matthew, for being here today. It's such an important topic, and something that we all need to realize that, I mean, the majority of people are literally being poisoned, and they're ingesting it by, you know, with themselves. They're actually picking it up and putting it in their bodies. And I think that situations like the one that we're seeing right now with, you know, a disaster recovery event like this is a testament to the importance of ensuring that we're fueling ourselves properly, so that we have resilient bodies that can withstand things like this, and also prepare us to intervene as necessary. Because I see the video, I see the footage of the people that are helping, and most of them they're in a certain degree of they're in a certain condition of health that makes them able to go out there and help. So again, make sure that you're preparing yourself to be an asset and not a liability, and you can really contribute to that by making the truthful, healthy choices in the way that we fuel our bodies and prepare ourselves for action, really. But yeah, thank you for those that are giving. Man, it's just awesome. I'm completely blown away by the generosity and the willingness to just step up. Bitcoiners are awesome people. Hop on the Bitcoin Veterans Twitter handle, X, and there's a pinned post at the top, and we're putting status updates and videos of what's going on out there. To you know, you can see what your contributions are making happen, because it's huge. It's huge. And so keep it up. Keep spreading the word. Keep praying. Keep pulling for us. We've got more people that are moving in as we speak that are making more things happen. So keep an eye out for that. And yes, we've been getting a lot of questions about what's going on in Florida. So we have our eyes on it very closely. We do have people on the ground there already that are surveying the situation in preparation. If more of us we're just a bunch of citizens who happen to have some valuable skills and experience that see a need, and we're jumping in and we're taking action because we realize that if not us, then who? So that's a lot I've got, but thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Gabe Lord. Matthew, do you have anything else that you would like to add, sir?
I do. One tiny note that I didn't mention, and that's how Bitcoin can help remedy this issue. And I know people are like, well, how would Bitcoin help diet? Well, what Bitcoin does is it doesn't in and of itself improve the food system. But what it does do is every time you buy a little bit of Bitcoin and you use your fiat to make that purchase, you're taking a jab at the Federal Reserve. And only when the Federal Reserve and the money printing comes to an end, only then, like, that removes the entire incentive to obscure our food supply. Like, without the incentive, the gaslighting campaign just, there's no reason for it. They're not trying to independently just hurt us. But what it does is it puts a stick in that spoke of the distortion needed to make us think that, like, we're living in a rational economy where the money isn't broken. So, buy Bitcoin, eat meat. And the one thing, I know your audience is like extremely independent minded, and I just want to remind everybody that, you know, personal, like, health presupposes personal autonomy. You can't truly be free when you're captured by your own ill health. You can't think clearly. So these issues, we're at a really dangerous time in this country right now. And these issues, like, we all need to have our wits about us. And do whatever it takes to keep yourself healthy, because only then can you actually really be independent.
Yeah, that's very well said. You can't ever, you know, claim your stack if you're on a hospital bed. So make sure that you take your health seriously. So Matthew, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Everyone, go out there, buy his book. It's on Amazon. You can buy it at the Safe House as well. Give it a read. It's trust me, it's money well worth, well invested. Your health is very important, and it's an easy read. It's not overly complicated. So again, Matthew, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, man. Have me back sometime. I love this, and you guys are great. I appreciate it. And please keep up all that great work. It's amazing to watch what you're doing.
Yeah, thank you. And you're welcome back anytime, Matthew. We'll reach out again in a couple months. But yeah, anytime you want to, you just want to talk about how shitty the food system is, come on board. We love to hear it. We're all on the same page.
Thanks, man.
So that'll be it. That's a wrap for today. Again, I want to thank everybody who tuned in. It really means a lot. Everybody out in the audience, I can't name you all, but I see you here every day. It does mean a lot. It makes my job a lot easier. And thank you for everyone who's donated up on our donation page, and everyone's retweeting it. That means a lot. Join us tomorrow. We're doing this again at 10 a.m. Eastern time. We'll just be covering the updates going on, seeing what's going to be happening with Hurricane Milton and exactly how we're going to prepare for that. On Thursday's show, we have Bob Burnett with Barefoot Mining joining us. So that'll be a great episode. Get some questions ready for that. I really look forward to picking Bob's brain. Gabe, correct me if I'm wrong, but we are not doing a Bitcoin Veterans video podcast tonight, correct?
We're going to be making an announcement on that. If we can line it up, then we're going to stream in Shane from North Carolina on his activities out there. But we'll put out an announcement on the X handle.
All right, perfect. Thank you. So just another reason to make sure you're following us on X, Bitcoin Veterans. Again, we're going to be doing this tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, and that's it. Go out there and have a fantastic day and crush it.